Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Employers, simplify your pension scheme with a Zurich Master Trust. Zurich Corporate Pensions. Trust excellence. Visit zurichcorporate.ie.
Gala dinner is taking place this evening in Hillsborough Castle, hosted by British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, to mark the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. Among the attendees is my next guest, Peter Burke, Minister of State for European Affairs and Defence, and he joins me now, Falls Route Minister, to the programme. Now, I know Bill Clinton, whom we heard there, met with Geoffrey Donaldson, I think, yesterday. He said he was more hopeful after the meeting of restoring Stormont, getting government back up and running again than he was before the meeting. I just wonder, what is your thought after listening to all the speeches and views there today? Will Stormont be restored soon?
Well, I think we're after the back of a very, very good week, having President Joe Biden over. And he was spending time in Belfast and obviously down in Ireland addressing the Oireachtas. It was very important when he pointed out that peace needs champions, it needs advocates. And that's one thing that the Good Friday Agreement really does need. It needs Assembly back up and running. And I think he had built up good relations with the DUP. And you could see from the interview of Geoffrey Donaldson subsequent to his lecture in Belfast, that there was very warm words exchanged between the President and the Unionist community in his keynote address. So I'm hopeful that momentum is building, that we will get the institutions back up and running. But it is a big challenge, and we've had many false dawns. It's almost a year in May now when the 90 members of the Assembly were elected, and obviously they're elected to do a job.
And it'll and take more than warm words from a former US President, notwithstanding that it's Bill Clinton, to get Stormont up and running. Will the DUP be attending this dinner this evening?
I understand so that they are invited, and I understand they will be attending, and I hope to do, because it's very important that Bill Clinton was the one who appointed the special envoy in George Mitchell back in 1998. And that was a big issue in terms of providing a catalyst to keep important members in the room at that very time when debate was getting heated, and it was a very difficult process.
And George Mitchell was key, actually, in finding peace and brokering a peace and an agreement and a compromise at the end, because he issued all of the parties after a long negotiation with a deadline. And I just wonder, is there anyone now, you say a champion, is there any champion among you who can say to the DUP, you can hold the North to ransom no more after democratic elections? You have to put up or shut up, to use a political phrase from Britain, and you have to decide one way or another. Is there any ultimatum?
Well, I think both governments, the British government and the Irish government, post the Windsor framework, were keen to give the DUP time, obviously, to go through the agreement, because one thing is that we don't want to kind of put significant pressure on the early stages to try and push people into Stormont almost quickly, because that can have negative effects. And we've seen in the past, in terms of the DUP, how that has really played out, because the people that suffer then are the people of Northern Ireland, who are the foremost who are
trying
to get the Assembly
them?
Back up and running. Well, I think it's absolutely urgent now. Time is very limited. We do need to get the Assembly back up and running. As I pointed out, there are a number of problems that are escalating in Northern Ireland. You ask people up there when I visit, you have healthcare, education, policing, you know, huge issues that really need to be, have decisions taken by the members that were elected by the citizens of Northern Ireland.
Yeah, I want to move on, but you have no deadline,
the local elections. Well, the local elections are coming up now in May, and obviously that may be a catalyst to try and focus minds and get people back into the Assembly. But the reality is, Cormac, we can't make them go back in. We have an obligation as joint guarantors to work as hard as we can, and the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach are providing all the support to the institutions to try and encourage and get them sitting back in Stormont, and hopefully get the government elected again.
Can I ask you about another matter which is being discussed in the Dáil and discussed all across the media today as well? And that is, of course, housing and missed housing targets. The Social Democrats, for example, are saying you're not doing the bare minimum by not spending the budget. It was revealed yesterday that 7,400 plus new social homes were built last year, just over 1,500 short of a new build target for 2022. We also found out that affordable homes targets were missed. Why are you missing targets in the middle of a housing crisis?
Well, you're very much aware in terms of globally, we actually exceeded the number of homes required in Housing for All in 2022. We built 29,851 homes. That's up 45% from 2021. But the key thing is, when you drill down into the numbers, it is correct to say we've had challenges with affordable housing and with social housing. And the reasons are, first of all, in relation to affordable housing, 2022 was the first time in a generation that we had affordable homes delivered into the marketplace. The bill was only enacted in late 2021. And in relation to...
So why are you missing your targets for 22?
Because we faced unprecedented challenges. On the back of COVID, we're all well aware of the supply chain issues with the war in Ukraine. Energy prices increased dramatically. And we had to put a new framework into our public spending code to allow burden sharing between public contracts. And all that took time from COVID.
I would buy that.
Because of the truth.
I would buy that if I didn't have before me a press release from the Department of Housing from Minister Dara O'Brien, which said that the plan, the Housing for All plan, is on track to exceed 2022 target for new homes. And that's dated November 22. He knew about COVID. He knew about Ukraine and the supply chain problems. So what has gone wrong in the 4 months hence?
Well, there has been 29,800 new homes put into the marketplace. That is a 45% increase in 2021. It's way over the 24,600 required by Housing for All. And we do need new homes.
So why can you do it for new homes, but you can't do it for social and affordable? Answer me that.
Because of the challenges I pointed out from COVID, inflation and supply chains and capacity.
But surely they also apply to new homes.
Absolutely. But
so why can you... So hang on, my question...
My
question sustains. Why can you do it, notwithstanding COVID in Ukraine, for new homes, but you can't meet targets for social and affordable?
Because new homes are delivered through the private sector that I can see in my own locality. A whole host of new homes being built, over 200 on one site in Mullingar. When you're talking about social homes and affordable homes, they have to go through the public spending code. Public money has to have its checks and balances to ensure that it is value and that the correct standards are being met right across the delivery.
So it's public sector bureaucracy that's holding it up?
It is absolutely clear when you're going through the public spending code that it does take time. You cannot approve a project immediately like you can in the private sector. And for good reason, because you have to ensure that the quality stacks up, that they're NZ rated homes, perfectly sustainable into the future. And that does take time.
Where is the delay exactly? Because we know that the money is there, ready to be spent. So where is the delay in the public sector?
The delay is exactly as I pointed out. In the first instance, when we had an inflationary crisis, we had a number of public contracts that were issued. And unfortunately, the contractors and the builders that were delivering those homes on the ground were unable to carry them out for the price agreed under the fixed price contract.
They're private contractors, aren't they?
No, these are private contractors operating on a public contract for the state.
Yeah, and that was the same...
But they're doing a public contract for the state.
So yeah, let me just get to the bottom of this. So you were saying that they had to stop. They had to stop for new homes as well. That's the problem. So they were ready to go. They were ready to go.
No, new homes are different. When you're talking about the private market, so you take one of the big private construction companies, come into the marketplace, they're accountable to their shareholders and how to spend their money, and they can make decisions very quickly in terms of whether to progress with a project or not. When you're talking about public money, you're talking about a public contract with private contractors, some of them are obviously, and you're trying to ensure that when an escalation happens in price, well, that has to be approved through the public spending code. And that takes time because you have to ensure that
there's no way to expedite
if there's an escalation. Pardon?
There's no way to expedite that process in the middle of a housing crisis with growing numbers of people homeless.
Minister Pascal Donoghue, number one, we've put in a new framework in terms of burden sharing for housing construction projects. And secondly, he's reduced the six-stage process down to three with a cabinet decision 2 weeks ago. So all that will help in trying to assist more homes. And the reality is, if we keep increasing at the rate we are, 32% of an increase in total from 2022 to 2023, if we keep on that trajectory, we will get there, but I absolutely
Because homeless figures are also increasing.
But I absolutely appreciate there are thousands of families looking to get their first home and looking for that security. But if we keep increasing that, we will meet that demand. And the reality is that the government is doing everything it can. We have 400 new first-time buyers every single week getting the keys for their new home, getting to realise their dreams. And that is a record since 2010.
Before I move on to another topic, when will the excuses stop and when will you start meeting your targets?
But these are not excuses because, number one, we met the target globally. As I said, we have 29,851 new homes delivered in 2022. That's well above the 24,500 in Housing for All. That is a fact. Secondly, as I said, in terms of the rate of first-time buyers, we have a huge number of first-time buyers coming into the marketplace. We have over 1,243 this January that got the keys to their new home. That's a huge increase. And all those initiatives that government have, like Croí Cónaithe, bringing old houses back into use, like our first home scheme, and indeed the Help to Buy, where we have 7,000 new applications in January alone for Help to Buy. That's 36% up for 2022. That shows that people are getting mortgages, they're drawing them down, and they're getting into the marketplace.
Okay, we'll see. People can make up their own minds based on what you say. Can I ask you finally on one other topic? The Secretary General of the Department of Health, Robert Watt, he rejects most of the findings of a report, Minister, that criticises the attempted secondment of Dr. Tony Holohan to Trinity College Dublin. Now, the government has accepted, and I think you accept, am I right, this report, which looked into the matter. The government in general accepts the findings of the report, but Robert Watt, the Secretary General, rejects many of the findings of the report, or most of them. So what happens now?
Well, first of all, I have to preface my comments that I haven't actually read the report myself. I've been inundated with other issues within my portfolio. I think in the first instance, what you have here is that procedures were not followed. And that is obviously very significant in public life. You have to ensure procedures are followed. What government has to do, it has to balance that off with when you have someone of immense capacity and capability in public life and you don't want to lose that expertise into the future, how do you do it? So obviously the accusation is that a job was almost readied up for Dr. Holohan, but you have to have a process by where you can ensure that through the utmost probity and transparency, you can retain people that are invaluable in terms of the...
I understand all of that, but the problem we have here is that Robert Watt does not accept that procedures weren't followed. So the government says they weren't followed. He says they were followed. Who's right and who's wrong?
Well, I think it's clear that procedures were not followed. I think the report...
Okay, so if that is correct then, what happens? Is there any consequence or sanction?
Well, the consequences are that it's not acceptable in public life to not inform a minister at an appropriate juncture and time on a big decision like this. That should have happened in this case.
That's not
the
a
Minister
consequence.
For Health, of one of the foremost persons within the department, should have been informed on time. And essentially, government obviously has to consider this. As I said, Cormac, I just haven't read...
No, I understand that, but I just wonder, in terms of... We're talking about the spending of millions of euro of government or taxpayers' money here. We're talking about governance at government level. We're talking about key decision-making procedures here. And you're saying the procedures were not followed. And I just wonder if there will be any consequences.
But the connotation of your question is that we're spending millions of euro almost as if we're throwing it into the ocean. What the government was doing here is spending money to retain one of the best minds in public health internationally.
I'm talking about following procedures or not, that's all.
Absolutely, but don't suggest that it's wasting millions of euro. That's the point I'm making.
No, I didn't suggest that. I didn't suggest that at all. My question is quite a simple one, really. The government is saying that procedures were not followed. We have one of the most senior civil servants, if not the most senior, saying they were followed. And this is after an investigation, a lengthy investigation and a comprehensive investigation by an expert. And he rejects most of the findings. No.
But some of the findings, I think, is a term he's used. Now, I do not know exactly what he has rejected or he didn't reject because I haven't seen the committee today. I was on my feet all day today, Cormac.
Minister Peter Burke, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks.